Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 72. The Animated Series, Season 1, Episodes 6 and 7, The Survivor, and The Infinite Vulcan.
I assume the danger to your ship is over. It is, as it should be. I'm sorry if I endangered your vessel.
Why did you do it?
Among my own people, I'm a non-producer, useless. An outcast fit only to do those tasks of the lowest order. The Romulans offered me a life, something of value I could do. It is important to be of value to someone.
What changed your mind about the Romulans?
It seems, Captain, that I'm more Carter Winston than I knew. He loved life. He loved Anne. I couldn't allow the Romulans to harm any of you because of him.
I understand.
What will happen to me now?
You'll have to stand trial. But you did save the Enterprise from the Romulans. And I will recommend that be taken into consideration.
Thank you, Captain.
Star Trek.
Star Trek.
Let's start the podcast.
Stardate 5143.3.
Oh, man. All right. So, welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast. We welcome you. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Welcome.
In which we will be discussing two episodes, episodes 6 and 7 of Star Trek, the animated series, first season. And those episodes are The Survivor and The Infinite Vulcan.
Yep.
AKA one of the weirdest fucking episodes of Star Trek I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's kind of nonsense.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. But we will begin. We don't have any letters this week, so we can't regale you with any letters. No letters this week, but if you do want to send us a letter, I mean, we had letters, but you know, not for air. Private matters. Oh, primarily private matters. Advice, life advice, that sort of thing. Which we do welcome, but obviously we're not gonna read some
like
of that.
People tell us what to do and where to go and stuff.
Yeah.
And
oh,
where
yeah.
Where we can put it.
Yeah, they do tell us those things as well. But you can
where you can put it.
Yeah, yeah. The different places you can put things.
You know, where you can.
You where
can,
could you possibly
can,
put
you
it?
You can put it right up there.
Yeah. Right up where?
Like
right
on top there. Of that shelf over there.
In right my, up over there. You see.
Can I put it in my scabbard?
If you happen to have a scabbard, and if the thing that you were trying to put someplace is scabbardish.
Whenever they
scabbard light.
Whenever they put the sword in the scabbard, they always use their index finger to trace the sword so they can like place it properly in that tiny little hole. That's why I'm guessing they do it.
Who's they?
Whenever you watch TV or cartoons.
Swordsman.
TV or cartoons.
Well, all right. So, and we're watching a cartoon, two cartoons this evening, as it happens.
No scabbards in this news, though.
We'll start this week with The Survivor.
It's got Star Trek.
That's right. That's where we're already past that.
We
bit.
Got
we
it.
Passed that bit. The Survivor.
It's the episode, final opening.
Episode 6.
Yep. So it's about this guy, Carter Winston. Carter.
Ted Knight.
He acquired 12 fortunes by being the foremost space trader of our time. Notice his name is Carter. Carter sounds like cartography. You need cartographical skills in order to make trades on the open sea in space.
Yeah, or a Carter is a guy with a cart.
Or a cart. He's got a cart that puts
full of goods. Yeah.
Put stuff in. But his deal is he's a cool guy because he feeds Federation people in times of need. So everyone loves this dude.
Yeah, he's a wealthy philanthropist.
Yeah,
I found this all very peculiar. Not necessarily in a bad way. I enjoy
what the fact that is that he definitely dyes his beard, mustache, and hair because his eyebrows were dark.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. First of all, excellent observation. The whole mustache thing. The animated series seemed to think that if you wanted to show that somebody was super sexy, that you put a big old bushy mustache.
Yeah,
on
and he
it.
Had the curly mustache. I wasn't sure how to interpret it. I'm like, it's not an evil mustache, but there's something about that mustache that we're supposed to have feelings about it for some reason, but I don't know what feelings.
Filmation was like done in Norway, right?
You know, I don't know off the top of my head. We can have our data.
So everybody looks
data
so. Everybody out. Looks very angular and like sort of square.
Yeah, and then in the next episode, there's some weird peculiarities in some of the different characters. But
it says it's Reseda, Los Angeles, California.
Oh, okay.
Found in 1962, defunct 1989.
Is that where it was based entirely, or did they farm stuff out? I don't know if you'll
well,
be
I mean,
because in some of the credits, some of the credits will say Filmation and just Norway. At least it does for us, the Star Trek show. Other Filmation stuff, I don't notice if it
interesting
said that stuff like, you know, He-Man and whatever else they did. They did He-Man.
Whoever was animating it, and I presume it was in the storyboards as well, the mustache was a big indicator, and certainly it's true in this episode, that he's meant to be this super sexy guy. This episode comes right after More Troubles, More Tribbles, in which we have another...
That guy's got a mustache.
...merchant. You know, you have Cyrano Jones, right? And he's like a merchant guy, right? You know, travel around doing merchant stuff. But he's looked down upon as this scrabbly kind of guy.
You're talking about the original series?
No, in the animated series.
Did he have a neck poof like this guy? This guy had some kind of fancy neck poof.
He had this Cyrano Jones, too many pockets, including an animated form, you know, kind of jacket. His jacket was a little different on the animated show. But here, the immediate next episode has this paragon of the merchant class, where he keeps getting rich and then giving away all his money and going on grand adventures to help save people. And I wasn't sure if this was just, they're like, all right, he's a merchant, and we're just trying to say that we're trying to give a reason for why Kirk and McCoy and others would be so sort of starstruck by this guy. And I'm
McCoy
guessing,
especially.
Yeah, and I'm guessing the concept was, I'm just trying to see if there's a deeper meaning to this, or if all it was is these are Federation people in the future. We want them to be starstruck because that's relevant to the plot, that this guy kind of sneaks his way on and charms people. And how are they going to be starstruck? This is the Federation, so they're not going to be starstruck by a movie star or rock star. I know they'll be starstruck by some guy who is super selfless and helps all these people.
Very sexy. Yeah.
I guess McCoy said that his daughter was helped out by, mm-hmm. I guess, some planet she was on. Was having a food shortage.
I missed that part.
And this is the only on-screen mention of McCoy's daughter, yes. Joanna.
I thought that was interesting as well.
She was supposed to be mentioned. Apparently, according to Memory Alpha, she was mentioned, I think, as far back as the Star Trek Bible, like the series Bible. But I believe DC Fontana had planned to introduce her as one of the space hippies in the original conception of the Way to Eden.
That's right, yeah.
Which we talked about a couple weeks ago. But in the rewrites, that part of it got taken out. So this is the first and only, I think, on-screen mention of Joanna McCoy or whatever.
McCoy's not a very good dad. He doesn't talk about his daughter. He just abandoned her, you know. Nobody talks about that.
And he thinks this guy is just the bee's knees. He's just like, why do we don't need to check his ID?
Identity tapes.
Well, so, like, I'm wondering if it, like, with the animated show in particular, I'm sometimes curious if they're like, okay, these are going to be shown on Saturday morning. Let's start with the moral and then build a story around that. And I was wondering if the moral of this story, or one of the chief morals of the survivor, is you should follow protocol closely. It's important to follow protocol, because if you don't, you might get tricked.
Somebody's going to trick you.
By a shape-shifting communist.
So yeah, the computer was like all about this dude, saying the identification positive, fingerprints positive, voice print positive, all license and registration in order,
hunting license.
Yeah, but then McCoy's handheld little doodad thingy was the one that was like, wait a minute, there's something wrong with this. So I want to know
something weird with this guy's genes.
So I want to know why the doohickey like detected something weird and the computer didn't. Maybe it's just that speaks towards humans' abilities to interpret strange data that computers don't have.
So first question I have is, considering how constrained the amount of time is to tell stories on the animated series, which we've discussed in previous discussions about the animated series, they have such a small amount of time to tell a Star Trek story. I found it peculiar that this the whole McCoy and, you know, or the whole Kirk talking to the computer, they really stretched that out. They really made that took up a lot of time, the whole like talking to the computer to confirm his ID, only to have it undermined fairly rapidly because McCoy, as you said, when he's actually looked at medically, something's not quite right.
Yeah, and McCoy didn't even believe his equipment, so he should have followed protocol. He was like, no, our equipment must be bad. Yeah, I don't know, you know, maybe they just had to add a couple seconds at the end. there was a lot of stuff going on, I guess, that they were trying to sort of squeeze into these episodes, sort of.
Well, so you have this Vendorian, right, which we got to see recently on Lower Decks, which was cool, right? So they had that this same creature that has all the tentacles and things. Once the story unfolds, it's one of those stories that's more interesting in retrospect. I like this episode, but when you get to the end where in typical, again, Star Trek fashion, it turns out that the antagonist is not really an antagonist, or at least isn't after you attempt to communicate with them, right?
And they don't really explain why, except for whatever reason.
Because they spent all that time checking the guy's ID on screen.
Right. And well,
affirmative.
The only reason they gave the part where he was sort of rejected from his planet, he's like, I'm a non-producer, useless, an outcast, fit only to do those tasks of the lowest order.
Which is like a class commentary.
Yeah, but I wanted them to go a little bit more. I mean, they didn't have time, obviously, but I couldn't help but be like, wait a minute, you introduced that idea. Mm-hmm. I want to know more about why you're considered this. And it was just a throwaway line to just sort of say, I wasn't that into the Romulans to begin with. I was lost and I was looking for a direction. And it still doesn't fully explain why he flip-flopped from the Romulans suddenly. He had emotions for Anne Norred or whatever, but then somehow that translated and transferred into him suddenly feeling sympathy for the Enterprise as a whole, I guess.
We made this comment about the Way to Eden in that there were sort of too many competing storylines going on at once, and so they cannibalize some time from each other. And I think there's a little bit of that going on here, because there's like the class thing with the Vendorian. There's the Romulans hiring this guy, this creature, to do the spy job in order to lure the Enterprise so they can take over the Enterprise. So that's something that's going on there. There's this whole concept of the shapeshifter to begin with and the type of thrilling tale you could tell there. And then, as you said, this guy, the implication sort of is that since this guy has taken on the form of humans, he sort of understands them now and is more sympathetic. And then, of course, you have this weird love story fiance thing.
Oh yeah. That's yeah.
Oh, and what's the lieutenant's name again?
Anne Norred.
Anne Norred.
Yeah.
Voiced by Nichelle Nichols.
So, Anne Norred, every single thing that happens, and even her reactions, all of it is makes sense and makes sense in a story perspective. It's how it's portrayed, right? It's like the idea that she would not, she has an opportunity to shoot him. She knows it's not her former lover, fiance. And so she cannot bring herself to shoot him because he looks like him. There's nothing wrong with that in principle. It's only made sort of problematic because of, like, in the 60s, they were all like, oh, I'm a woman and I, oh, heavens to be. I'm so, you know, the way it was portrayed was, I think, a little unfortunate. It was all centered around, like, her love for this guy.
Yeah.
And she loves him so much that she'll even take this, like, sort of tentacled facsimile.
Yeah, and it was at first she like was surprised by the tentacle person and couldn't deal with it, but then later on she decided, no, I'm really into it.
Her reactions were just super stereotypical sitcom lady nonsense from, which, you know, it's 1973. This aired on I think it was October 13th, 1973, which was unfortunate because you could have told the same story without stronger written, you know, female characters, which they have had on the show and on TAS, right? They've done that, right? So it's not like they don't know how.
She also looks a bit young. I don't know how old is she supposed to be, but this guy...
That guy looks pretty old.
Yeah, so she looks a bit young to be with someone who's made 12 fortunes and then on top of that went missing for 5 years.
Yeah,
like, I don't know how old she could have been when they started... You know, together, because she didn't look like they didn't portray her as seeming at around his age.
And who stays like engaged for like five? I mean, she was missing, but like before that, how long were they engaged? Like, she's off on some mission.
Yes, no, it's a good point. There's a lot. Again, it's almost like, why did they need to have that in there?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They could have told that same story without that. They could have told it differently. First of all, same basic plot, but then they that is somewhat extraneous.
Right. So the alien, when the alien was talking about he was a non-producer among the Vendorian's people, They could have probably resolved that. They didn't have to introduce that, but they could have probably resolved it maybe better if it was something more along the lines of our species is treated as a slave species on the planet we're from. Maybe that would have made more, at least.
Well, so
because to say, among my mm-hmm. people, I am useless. I want to know what makes you useless. You seem, but when you say it's like, oh, our whole species is subjugated, right? That's the right word,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, our whole species is subjugated. You just kind of take that and say like, okay, that happens in stories.
Where I might argue with that only slightly is I don't like how individual they made it. They almost implied as if this creature alone, something was different about this creature in such a way as opposed to it being more class-like. Because what happens in sci-fi a lot.
Well, that's what I said.
No. Let me clarify. Right. I'm right there with you. Just middle of the way. Sci-fi tends to, and Star Trek is does this all the time, and it makes sense for why it does it because it's telling stories. But it does have this tendency to create, like, this planet, all the people are like this.
Right.
That planet, all the people are like that. What's cool about Star Trek having gone on so long is that we learn more about Vulcans and Ferengi and Klingons, and so we start learning there's Klingon nerds and scientists and stuff like that, which is great. But I respect that the animated series was trying to be a little bit more ambitious in saying that this guy was like some sort of like lower caste guy,
okay.
But because they have literally 7 seconds to explain all this, they tantalize you with this interesting thing, and then they don't give you like you're saying, you don't get to hear the cool stuff they could have done with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's why they should have made it more like generic.
Yeah.
You know, because they only had that much time, there's no
make
reason
it easy.
To tease me. Yeah.
Make it easy, don't overcomplicate it because you're just missing out.
He was working with the real Carter Winston, and that's how he learned how to shapeshift into Carter Winston.
Presumably.
So,
yeah.
Like, he's not just some bozo that, I mean, they assigned Carter Winston to him. Like what?
That's a good point. I hadn't considered that. Like, Winston maybe was trying to help him out or something.
So, so that brings up the point of, another point that they brought up that I found interesting about the species that they didn't really go into that much was, so the way Carter Winston said it, he's like, the longer I take their form, the more, you know, connected I am with who they are. So that implies like, Vendorians like to take the form of others, usually like because it makes them more like their host. Most shapeshifters in Star Trek or in a lot of lore in general, they don't spend a ton of time in the form of mimicry, right? There's your basic form. You got what's her name from X-Men, Mystique. She's always this blue creature, but she can mimic things from time to time. You got the T-1000, mimics things from time to time. You've got Odo, who's always Odo, mimics things from time to time. This guy's saying the implication is that Vendorians do like to take the form of others. Otherwise, why would they start to adopt the feelings and mannerisms and thoughts and opinions of their host form? You know, because if they were only in their bodies for a few seconds, they wouldn't do that. But the way they explained it is they were just like, the longer we're in this form, the more...
Yeah,
more connected we are on some kind of soul-like level to this thing.
It would be interesting if on his planet, if maybe that's taboo. There's all these great stories you can have maybe they're like, oh, we don't want you to sympathize with the other people. So maybe that would be, again, just bullshitting.
And that's part two to the other one, the class system you were talking about, in the sense that they took 7 seconds to introduce this idea that was fascinating, but suddenly I'm like, wait, I want to know, like you said, that I didn't even think about that. That's clever. And I would want to know more stuff like that.
It's like, we only use Vendorian shapes that are native to Vendorian.
Vendor.
We're not going to pretend to look like humans or, you know, all these other weirdos.
Did you get a load of that stuff at the beginning too? When Spock is all talking about it, he's all like, they are not to be trusted. They live on mischief. And I was like, Spock is just spouting out some like stereotypes. And at the time I was listening to him say that and I was thinking of it, I was like, that sounds stereotypical, but I was thinking of it from a 2021 lens. But then as the episode goes on, they correct those stereotypes because this Vendorian is like, I'm not like that. Like, I've been tricked into that by the Romulans, but honestly, it's kind of like the equivalent of somebody joins a gang and then they come out of the gang and they're like, well, they were really awesome to me. And I didn't understand that there were these other forms of awesome that I hadn't even experienced that were better.
Spock had an error in judgment.
Yeah. Kirk said, and Spock said error. He also said censor, but Kirk said censor.
Yeah.
Spock's the only one that
and
does.
Then, and then whenever McCoy says like era with like a funny, like Georgia accent.
Mm-hmm. Deceit is a way of life, which I guess is like the easiest first thing to draw from a mm-hmm. shapeshifter, but then you could take that analogy to other things like
a chameleon.
Like chameleon.
Or one of them crazy ass
or an actor.
Squid things. An actor. Yeah. An actor.
Acting.
Acting.
Okay.
The most proficient liars of all.
At one point, you know, Carter is in weird form tearing up the wires and Scotty sees him and he fucking knocks Scotty out. What kind of weird ass neck pinch did he give Scotty?
He did that twice, by the way, because he did that to Kirk.
Oh, did he? I missed
that. When he basically does that to Kirk, and then he lifts Kirk, all puts him in bed.
Yeah.
Kirk is always ending on TAS. Yeah. Kirk always ends up in bed somehow.
So it was like a throat pinch. It wasn't a neck pinch. It wasn't quite a choke. It was like a weird
little tentacle pinch.
Throat pinch. I don't know. I like.
There's
I,
different versions of that because the episode with the hippies, like one of the hippie guys, like snuck up behind a guard and like did something with his two thumbs, like jabbing him in the either side of a neck.
So I guess everybody has their own kind of thing they do.
That was some kind of hippie neck poke.
Yeah. I like when the Romulan said outnumbered, outgunned, and in the wrong. I thought that's like a good thing to say to people.
They showed up in their Klingon ships.
Oh yeah, that's right.
But kind of not really because in the TOS. We see there's that whole confusion that results from TOS as well as Star Trek III in terms of which ships are Romulan versus, you know, Klingon. And these look kind of like D7 types or something. But in TOS, in Elaine of Troyes, I think it's labeled as a Klingon ship. But in the Enterprise incident, it's a Romulan ship that is kind of like this design. So my first reaction was, oh, the animators got something wrong. But then when I started like looking it up, I was like, oh, you know what? That's right. They've kind of like mungled it with a couple of the Klingon Romulan ships periodically. And this is just an example of that. They look cool, though.
Yeah. Two Romulan battle cruisers is what they call them. Did you see the awesome feeble chop that he gave to Anne's hand to make her drop the zapper? He gave her this like super feeble chop and it just dropped. And then he went into the super, like the all out sprint animation that Filmation has those set of animations. They went into the sprint animation like they were, like he was bawling.
Yeah, he was.
And he was in a tiny room and he's like sprinting across his room. And speaking of tiny rooms, McCoy spends all day in that medical bay and he didn't notice that they're normally two tables,
that
not
annoyed
three.
Me. Yeah. I will say that annoyed me.
Right. Because
McCoy should have pointed that out.
Yeah.
McCoy is treated like shit in this episode. The other thing is when they realize that the Vendarian has taken McCoy's shape is because McCoy like admits that he could be wrong about something. And Spock is all like, fuck, what the fuck? That can't be McCoy.
Yeah.
And then not realizing that there's a totally new medical bed, but to have Kirk realize it first is like extra obnoxious.
And when Bones,
McCoy lives there.
Yeah, when Bones, when
that's his house. That's where he lives. He lives in. He just goes to sleep on one of those beds.
They don't give him a real bed.
He just puts drugs in his fucking veins every day.
And the captain asks for an examination, and he's just like, "I got to run these tests." It's like you don't do that. You know, and the captain asks you that shit. You don't talk about running tests. So that should have been more of a. I think that was a stronger clue.
I agree. You know, you're 100% correct.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, Kirk seems to figure it out pretty quickly. I mean, that he doesn't need much, you know. Something weird happened to him and something weird's with McCoy, so, you know.
When Kirk woke up from that weird that sleep, he was like, "I've never fallen asleep on the job before." And Spock pulls that old line that we've all heard. It's like, "Perhaps you needed the rest." It's like, "What do you mean?" That line's kind of bullshit to begin with. It's like, "No, I didn't need the rest enough to sleep for 16 hours like in
meanwhile,
some weird spot."
When McCoy is found sleeping on his Spock is all like, "What the fuck is your problem?" What are you doing sleeping down there?
He's like, "You're a weird guy, but not that weird.
You're not that weird." You gross piece of shit.
You fucking asshole.
Floor sleeper.
So did... Floor sleeper. Don't you mess around with me. So I guess, do we know, does Anne and what's his name, the Vendorian, get back together? I guess they do.
Well, she said she was going to accompany him to Earth for his trial.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing that would have been interesting to see, and then to see him maybe have to serve in a New Zealand prison camp.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where one day Tom Paris might be.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, fooling around.
How often has Mares been, Lieutenant Mares, the weird Catwoman?
Lieutenant Meow.
I think this might be the first time. Is this the first time she was in this on that TAS?
She was freaking me out, man.
I think she's been in earlier TASs.
Maybe. I can't remember if she's
like
talked.
Once or twice.
I can't remember. Yeah, maybe she has. It's been a little while since we last saw them.
She talks all weird. They're weird. I don't like it because it's different than me.
McCoy makes a crack about how terrible it would be if there were two Spocks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is funny given what happens in the next episode, which we're about to
discuss.
The Infinite Vulcan.
Spock got McCoy twice in this episode because McCoy was like, "You caught him." And then Spock's all like, "Acute observation, doctor." After, like, it's
goddamn
very obvious
piece of shit.
They took him away. And then he goes on to some drawn out line about how, like, the level of medical efficiency on this ship will be acceptable if
they had a second McCoy.
Yeah, or something like that. So Spock was twice sassy. McCoy got fucked up by Spock twice. So you're right. McCoy did get fucked with this episode.
Do you think, does Spock have an anti-Southern bias or something? Because he doesn't treat any other humans like this.
Mm.
Does he? Have you ever seen him be as aggressively rude?
McCoy's kind of a dick to Spock, too. But do you think McCoy's a dick?
That's a fair point.
Do you think that's in response to Spock being an asshole?
It's the chicken or the egg, Marty.
Yeah, Marty.
Who knows?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I mean, it's just a thing they do, I think. I think that's how they were from day one.
It's banter. I mean, I find it cute. And
banter.
When McCoy replaced that other guy.
It's a little bit sexy.
It's banter. That other guy that gave that
guy was serving martinis.
Yeah, Kirk was feeling off, so he gave him a martini.
That was Pike.
It was Pike. That's right. It was Pike. You're right.
So, any other odds and ends, or shall we move along home?
Let's go to the second chap. Right. Wait. I just want to say that I don't believe that just because a shapeshifter can turn into a table, it can also turn into something that can reflect zappy lasers.
Yeah.
It's like, why not?
Shield.
There's a little bit more to a deflector shield than a table.
A little metaphysical there. Yeah. I agree.
Anyways.
I would say, I'll conclude by saying I do like the episode. I think it's a fun episode, fun sci-fi morality play. Largely holds together. The plot largely holds together.
Yeah, it's better than this next one.
I was just about to say that.
The Infinite Vulcan.
This is nonsense.
So
this was written by Walter Koenig.
It was Walter Koenig.
Yeah, that's right.
Except,
do you know who it was directed by?
Roddenberry kept making him rewrite it, and so he got really frustrated.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that's why
he was also pissed because they didn't let him on the show.
And they even made him audition to play the part of, I guess, Stavos or somebody. And they made him, Stavos like look like him, I think, but not, they wouldn't let him do the voice.
Man.
They had Dylan do the voice. This was directed by Hal Sutherland, and he directed all the other ones too. So that's why we don't always mention the director. Under key discussion points, my first note is, what the fuck is up with this episode?
Yeah.
And my second note is, why are the clones so huge?
Yeah,
okay, so...
So do I have it right that Corniculus came over with a plague and wiped out their civilization?
By accident.
And now because...
Or as the kids say, on accident.
On accident. But now because he decided that he felt bad and like, didn't allow them to completely die off, they now call him Master because he, quote unquote, saved them.
Okay, part of the brilliance of this episode, and it's lunacy. This episode is often listed as one of the worst episodes of the animated series or even Star Trek, but some people think it's one of the better ones. There are so many hints of interesting shit in this episode, and one of them is this whole Stavos, what's his name? Corniculus?
Corniculus 5.
Corniculus.
I don't know if it's Corniculus or Corniculus. They pronounce it Corniculus, but I think it's Corniculus.
Yeah, censors.
I think it's Eulus.
So.
Eulus? I don't know.
This episode makes it clear that he was interested in genetically cloning the augments. The Khan type people, like so, the people who caused the eugenics wars in the 90s, which you all will remember because we were alive in the 90s, so we remember the eugenic wars. It was horrific.
It was bad. It was
surprised we're all still alive.
Luckily,
and have all our parts.
Like I don't think any of them escaped on spaceships. I don't think.
No.
But anyway, so, okay, first of all, the thing about the Eugenics Wars is funny is that working backwards, you got to figure that most of those people must have been genetically engineered in like the 1950s or 60s or something. And then by the 90s, they take over. There's the Eugenic Wars. And then Stavos was a genetic engineer whose whole idea for world peace or galactic peace was to clone a bunch of the augments to create a clones superhuman, like, peacekeeping force, right? Yeah,
that are all big.
Peace through domination, mm-hmm. right? So that's an interesting story, but it's one line in this episode.
Yeah, and it's at the end because the whole episode, I feel
you
like
have no idea what the deal
we're led to believe that he keeps talking about a master race. And whenever people start talking about a master race, they're talking about some evil shit. Yes. And at the end, he's like, I want to put this master race together for peace. You know, it's like, what? Okay.
Peace through strength.
It still sounds bad.
So I guess that you could say that was a mislead that you could argue that it was done on purpose, but it seemed too clumsy to be on, like... Like, on purpose in the sense that it was meant to make you think one thing and then another. But mm-hmm. I think it was, the whole thing was just too clumsy to get that vibe.
Yeah, clumsy is a kind, word.
So they walk into that place with the hall. I might have misunderstood this scene, but the little green guys, the green plant people, I did like the idea of...
The Phylloseans.
Of like...
I think they're awesome.
I think that was cool, the idea of plant-based life and then how, I forget which character... sort of drove that point home is like we're, you know, our animal instincts or something. Because they always talk about humans are animals mm-hmm. and it's always kind of hard to picture. But then when you look, well, that's a plant-based species. We are an animal species. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so they go into this hallway with their ancestors, which are actually just their parents, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. And they're like three, four times their size.
Because these people are all sterile. They're five left. This is like wink of an eye.
But wait, why are they so big? Is it because they're older?
Maybe they're older.
That's the only thing I could think is that the ones that...
Maybe it just looks cool. Because it looks straight out of like Castle in the Sky or Nausicaa, some sort of Miyazaki type anime.
Right, but it's like Agmar... The only thing I can think is Agmar and friends are not old enough to be that big because...
Or they're not getting enough nutrients or something.
But there's so many questions. It's like...
Yeah, I know.
Because it doesn't help. It doesn't help that Caniculus is big and then Spock is big. So you wonder, wait, did he make those people big and not Agmar? Wouldn't it be the other way around where he'd make Agmar and friends big and not those people? Shouldn't those people be small and Agmar be big? But then they couldn't hide the ships behind them.
So what's so great about discussing this episode is I am 100% with you. I am just as exercised about this particular thing, but it's all overshadowed by, there's all these questions that come up and they are all going to be overshadowed by the question about, wait a second, there's a giant version of Spock living with some Greek guy on a plant planet and he's still out there.
Yeah, he's still out there.
He's still out there just chilling.
Like making the Phylloseans proper, like, you know.
Yeah, Big Spock.
Big Spock. Yeah, they never talked about Big Spock again. And Big Spock was so dumb for a while. That was the whole thing. It's like eventually he became smart.
It's because little Spock had to look out for Big Spock.
It was
he had to have his brain drained.
It was awesome when he did the mind meld, except he used his finger. He used his index finger to do his mind meld. They called it something else. They called it a mind touch.
Mind touch. The plant people are a really cool concept, and we did get a little bit more. What was nice with this episode, we didn't get as much backstory as would have been nice, but we got a good chunk of it, right? We understood to some degree what was going on, that Stavos shows up at some point. Inadvertently, he's infected with some sort of strep bacteria that's not affecting him for some reason.
Stavos?
Stavos. Yeah, isn't that his first name? Stavos Caniculus.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I just keep calling him Stavos.
Yeah,
Caniculus.
He brings disease to the planet.
By accident. And
he obliterates everything, culture, the people, everything, their agriculture,
and then
everything.
Takes over
like the
remaining. Then he, like a cult leader, he's like, oh, I feel bad about killing all your people, so I'm your leader now.
Yeah, and they treat him like that. They're like, you saved our lives. And it's like, what do you... He didn't prevent the rest of you from dying, but I wouldn't say he saved your life.
He figured out, they did, because he was a geneticist, so they implied that he was able to do something so that these five remaining stunted versions are limping along.
And It was awesome when he made his entrance and like all five of them looked at him and were all like, master, master, master. But it was like it was like the audio was really mismatched with what was going on.
They had really
screen.
Goofy voices.
If I were one of them. If I were one of them.
That was a terrible
And this guy was able to do some genetic stuff and help, you know, cure us, but we're sterile. Our civilization is dead. Everything that mattered to us is effectively dead. I would thank him. I would thank him for providing that genetic knowledge, you know, doing that to help us out. And then I would say, but that's step one here, buddy.
Yeah, right.
You've got a few more steps to go before you reach overlord master level.
I'm not going to hate you because you didn't know, but I'm not going to worship you.
And it would have been, I think, a little bit different if maybe they were, quote unquote, worshipped him, but that we understood that they were doing so reluctantly. They were maybe he had power over the machines or something like that, and so that they were compelled. And again, if this was a more longer form story, you could have had some division in the ranks of the Phylosians, where some of them are like more actually diehard into Stavos tuberculosis, whatever his name is, and others are like, nah, fuck this dude, I'm gonna bow my head and play the role because I don't want him to fucking stomp on us or whatever, because he's a giant for some reason. The clones are giant, and there's no explanation as to why the clones have to be giant.
Yeah, there's none.
I was thinking the whole time I'm watching this, I'm like, okay, he's carbuncle number five. Maybe the gag is good. They're going to reveal that every time you're cloned, like, you get a little bit bigger because the machine is silly. And it's that's the way it works. It's always stuck on 110% on the copy mode. So every time you clone, and so now that he's the fifth clone, he's five times as big. And then, nope. No, it just turns out you clone somebody and you can also just make him a giant.
Yeah. So, yeah, they can clone them, duplicate their physiological structure, but that which is learned,
but not their mind.
Yeah, their mind, they can't duplicate it. They can only transfer it, which to me that makes opposite sense, but like whatever. Yeah. It seems like it would be easier to copy something than to transfer it. Let's short of taking their brain out of their head.
Precisely.
You know, and but the way they resolve that, so they both have brains, is the mind meld. So the mind meld, the mind touch can copy that which is learned. So that's what Corniculus is missing. He's missing. Maybe that's why he needs Spock, so he can start copying these brains instead of.
They don't explain that well enough, and I was also a little annoyed.
They didn't explain any of it.
They Star Trek will sometimes do this where they will make an analogy to a literary character or a historical character. And the point of the analogy is to carry information. It's so that if you compare somebody to Napoleon, then you have an understanding of that character and you can apply those characteristics to the alien or whatever that you're talking to. Here they refer to him as some sort of modern Diogenes, which is confusing because Diogenes... he wasn't looking for some perfect specimen. He was he apparently used to go around with a lantern in the middle of the day and say, like, I'm looking for a guy. And by all accounts, he was just trolling people. He was, like, doing some philosophical trolling. So people would be like, my, what are you doing with your lamp on in the middle of the day? The sun's out. And he'll be like, I'm looking for somebody. And he'd be like, fuck you, you cynic. He's like, that's right.
That's what I am.
I'm a cynic. He was from this, and he
I'm
and he
from the cynic school.
His thoughts form the school of Stoicism, the philosophical school of Stoicism, which is all about poverty and this other. I mean, my point being is that they referred to him as a modern day Diogenes, but he doesn't seem to really match up with this Diogenes character. So
they didn't do their homework.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, but you know they knew this because they know all this stuff better than we do because they got like a really good education.
They're in the future and stuff.
Yeah. Well, then the writers.
They went to Starfleet.
I was talking about the writers of the show. The future, past. Yeah, yeah. What's it going to be?
That's funny. You know, I also had something written that just said, how did Corniculus get so big? Because at one point during the middle, I thought I'd missed something.
Me too. Oh, me too. I rewound it. Yeah. I rewound it multiple times because I was positive that I missed something. And by the way, I still account for the fact that maybe I did. Maybe something just like...
It's hard to believe.
Through my mind, but I feel more comfortable now. That's one reason why I asked you guys, because I was like, did I miss something?
Well, one part I rewound actually was when Caniculus introduces Spock 2, right? He's like, here's Spock 2. The scene ends.
How did they not see
it? Yeah, where'd he come from?
He's right there. He didn't walk in. Yeah. There's no door behind him. There's no giant it's just Balrog a cave behind him. He's up against a wall and he's just like, hey there, Spock 2.
So they introduce him. The scene ends. It's obvious commercial break. We come back from commercial break. And the plant dragons attack. They let loose Bones' great-granddad's secret plant spray.
Yeah.
The things go down.
Great-granddaddy.
The things go down. Then we find out that at some point during the commercial break, Caniculus left. Yeah. Because they're like, quick, before Caniculus gets back. He introduced Spock too when the scene ended, yes. And then somehow we didn't find out until the end of the next scene that he had been gone this next scene, and we don't know when he left.
Because I couldn't see through the mist of the terrible, terrible poison that they were spraying around.
Somehow he left, and we were supposed to know that. I did like when that tentacle creature like attacked Kirk, and Kirk snuck up behind it.
Yes,
he did put it in a chokehold. He put in this plant creature in a chokehold.
By the
first
way,
of all, which is awesome.
Second episode in a row where Kirk ends up having to tangle with a plant creature.
Yes,
a tentacle creature.
Yeah,
gets the better of him this time.
At first, I thought it was the first episode. I kept looking for it in the first episode, and I couldn't find it. And I was like, oh, it's the next one. Even better, though, is how he uses his arms to lock and hold Agmar's tentacles behind them as if they're human arms. You know that move where you lock your arms through their arms and they're behind their back? He did that with, like, three tentacles on one side and two tentacles on the other. He could just squiggle out if he needed to, you know?
He might be able to, although I was impressed with the animation
there.
It looked
cool, though.
Considering how much of the this style of animation is it relies on recycled animation, it's funny when they go out of their way to do something that looked more impressive than some of the live action TOS fight scenes in some ways.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed by it. I thought it was
speaking
cool.
Speaking of recycling, the scene where the creatures, the plant creatures are all swooping in, that's a recycle. They use that in a bunch of episodes of like things with wings.
And they
look almost the same, whatever things they're using.
So did the plant dragons, did they just add like squiggly bouncy cubert feet or whatever?
That makes sense then, because I was wondering why they did such a great job with the other plant creatures, but I didn't realize at first they were supposed to be plants, and then only halfway through I was like, oh yeah, that they would have to be plants because this is all about plant creatures and they have those plant tentacles, even though it's not like plants have a bunch of tentacles.
But plants can be dragons apparently.
And they played the exciting... the action music that's all like that's a different one.
That's a different one?
Yeah. That's the thinking. That's like the something's going down music.
Something's about to happen. Oh yeah, that's right.
It's great music. It's repetitive, but it's fantastic.
We discussed this. Did they just not get the rights to the opening theme or did they just want to do something different? It seems like they didn't get the rights to it.
I wouldn't be surprised if Roddenberry was figuring out how to make money off of it.
There's a little bit of the hint of the tune, and then it goes into a different tune.
It does it like the inverse. How would Roddenberry make money off?
I don't know, because he was good at figuring out ways to make money. That's why he came up with the whole edict thing, which is one of the most noble, majestic philosophies to come out of a sci-fi entertainment program.
Infinite diversity.
And it was basically, he wanted to make a pendant that he could sell, by all accounts. That's what I read in various books.
Oh, so you thought they were just going to make a new tune just in case that he could somehow profit off
maybe
of
he
it?
Figured he didn't have to pay Alexander Courage, and he could be like, hey, just move the notes up and down a little bit. Just wiggle the notes around a little bit.
Instead of going up, you're going
to
go down.
Add a disco beat to the back end. You got it. You got the Roddenberry seal of approval. Give me my money.
Speaking of tentacle creatures, the previous episode's tentacle creature.
Let's do. That'll be a whole different podcast.
When he turned good in the last episode, in the Survivor, when the tentacle creature turned good, suddenly he talked like this again. This is the voice that aliens talk in.
Mm-hmm.
He had this sort of like, it wasn't this voice of the Carter.
Right.
Yeah, he wasn't talking like Carter Winston.
Speaking through a megaphone. Phone announcing.
Ignore me.
He's announcing like the Late Show or whatever, Tonight Show. He's like, blah, 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 blah. I feel like that happens a lot in Star Trek episodes. I can't remember the voice of Caniculus if he had a similar voice, but there's one voice that's
it
super projected.
In Star Trek and like just old like sci-fi B movies and stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, Caniculus was played by Jimmy Doohan.
Yeah.
Right? And
like most of the other male characters.
And Angmar, is it Agmar? Agmar. I keep wanting to say Angmar, Lord of the Rings. Agmar was also doing, but yeah. I thought I like him. He's always, Jimmy Doohan, James Doohan, he does a great job with the voiceovers, but.
He was also the Romulan captain on the previous episode.
Yeah. He's their go-to voice person, which I'm sure annoyed Walter Koenig, because as we mentioned earlier, he had in fact auditioned for a role here, for the role of Caniculus. But I thought Doohan really did a good job. It was one of the more emotive jobs. And at first, Caniculus is this sort of bombastic character, but towards the end, he's getting, you hear all these like little emotive wriggles in his voice that I thought were really, really nice.
And he brought up his philosophy. It's like, well, what's the point of living if my goal has already been accomplished? You know, that kind of jib jab. Sulu, when he got thorned by that plant, he was like a mobile plant.
Yeah,
he's an immobile. It was a mobile.
He's like came from Mobile, Alabama.
And then when they fixed it, McCoy was all like, "Now just a minute, I can't let you, whatever you are, inject him with some alien dewdrop."
Yeah, alien dewdrop.
That was specious.
It was. Well, McCoy, what are you?
Yeah, even to plants, he can come up with
Sulu
it.
Sulu didn't
him
look
and,
that
him and Trip
Asian.
Tucker should hang out.
Yeah, no, they should.
Sulu looked rather not Asian the way they drew him.
I was gonna say the drawing of Sulu
sort of under Asian.
Okay, the treatment of Sulu in this episode in general,
more
was,
like Mike,
it was bizarre.
I didn't get the joke at the end, the inscrutable
joke.
Okay,
let's talk about the inscrutable joke.
I just didn't get it. I don't. I'm not afraid to admit it.
No, we gotta unpack this because they did it. Okay, and for those in the audience who don't remember, who didn't do your homework and didn't watch the episode because you thought you'd remember. But shame you on you. But it's for free on all the streaming services. You can find it. Anyway, the episode ends with Sulu helping out, and then they refer, I forget which one is it. Is it Kirk or McCoy who's
Kirk? He says, "By the way, Mr. Sulu, any chance of teaching me that body throw?" Because earlier Sulu threw that plant and it was like a weird sort of throw, but it was kind of smooth and awesome. It could come in handy sometimes. And Sulu goes, "I don't know, sir. It isn't just physical, you know. You have to be inscrutable."
Yeah,
and
like, inscrutable.
And then Kirk goes, "Inscrutable? Sulu, you're the most scrutable man I know." And then Sulu gives this smile and his teeth give that sparkle like it was like a like a toothpaste commercial.
He looks at the camera and winks.
Yeah.
That's super.
It's not just that he
super cartoony Saturday morning cartoon.
He breaks the fourth wall and winks. And refers to him when Kirk refers to him as being scrutable.
Now, is this some okay? So you know how in King of the Hill there's Supernusenphone,
Wasana-san.
Ken Wasana-san, and he's like, you know,
Jeffers?
He goes, he's super white, you know.
Super white.
Now, is this some sort of like racial sort of thing about you're very scrutable?
I think it's meant to be a reversey. Flip, judo flip, no pun intended, honestly. Because I think the joke is, this is the 70s, it's very, World War II is long ago, but still.
Breakfast in Tiffany's was several decades before.
So it's a Japanese man, and he refers to being inscrutable.
Maybe one.
Yeah, you're right, it was one decade.
He does a martial arts move on a plant by sneaking up on the plant.
Well, no, I don't know if the plant charged him or what happened.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm
but
not
it was a sneaky.
Exaggerate.
It was a sneaky throw. It was like one of
it
those
was,
go.
It
with
it was kind
of
like a judo type thing.
Yeah,
right?
go with the flow. Go with the flow throw. The setup was weird to say that you have to be inscrutable to make the throw.
I'm not well versed enough in the racists. The racists were on about with the Japanese at the time. So I might be inventing stuff in my head, and that's my own bias. But for me to have like the reference to an Asian man be inscrutable, and then the good guy hero to be like, actually no, you're a good guy, you're scrutable, and then even there it's already weird, and then to have Sulu like look at the camera and wink and like, tinkle in his teeth, which is totally weird and out of character for the show.
Yeah, so
and for Sulu,
it's more of a G.I. Joe thing, isn't it?
It is is a, you know what? It is a G.I. Joe.
Do that
thing.
On G.I. Joe, and they look at the camera and
I think this is pre G.I.
Joe. Noin is half the fucking battle.
Didn't G.I. Joe came?
Yeah, it was definitely pre.
I guess to refer to throwing someone as inscrutable means you have to be kind of sneaky, I guess.
I don't understand how else to interpret it.
Because like otherwise the setup it makes no sense. And the end and just as much as the end makes no sense with the looking at the camera and winking thing. Didn't they do a sparkle thing on his teeth? Or am I inventing that?
I have a memory of it, but you might have placed it there.
Yeah, it's possible. Because it just seemed like that would be obvious.
It's an implied
sparkle. I watched it over and over. It's so insane, and I don't know how to interpret it other than it's Star Trek trying to like do the reversey on a racial stereotype and then twist it around to be like, haha, and then winking at the audience saying like, we know you thought you were racist out there.
It was a little cringy.
I
had to look away. It was... just for that last little shot at the end.
It was weird.
It was kind of like a G.I. Joe at the end when they would do the PSAs or something. Yeah, and they go, G.I. Joe. And they all looked at the screen, you know.
Yeah.
But you're supposed to break the fourth wall in the PSA because they're talking to you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactamundo.
I don't have nothing against breaking the fourth wall. It's just, it just didn't make sense.
Okay, that's fine. But tell me this. Why the fuck were the clones so huge? I don't understand why the clones were so big.
I don't know.
He was like 60 feet tall. You know what doesn't help explain it? I went rooting around for production notes and stuff, right? And I found on Memory Alpha, they had some like quotes from Roddenberry. And I was like doing searches. I was like, why are the clones so big in the Infinite Vulcan? And they had this like conversation. I forget if it was with Roddenberry. I think it was with Roddenberry. Basically saying, well, we figured, you know, we could have done the giant Spock in live action, but it wouldn't have looked as good. But in animation, it's just as hard. It's just as easy to animate a 60-foot Spock as it is to animate a 6-foot Spock.
But doesn't explain why.
I know. There was no explanation. There was no like, but and the reason was because of these genetic anomalies. Like, come up with like a post hoc, ergo proctor hoc type, you know, some sort of justification.
Was the big Spock bigger than the big Snorkulus?
No, they were about the same size.
They were about the same. He might have been a little taller. I don't know.
But that would have just been natural height as opposed to like unnatural clone bigginess. At one point, Kirk goes to Spock 2, Big Spock, and goes, out of my way, mister. That's an order.
Yeah.
It was a that's an order line, except it made sense. Yeah. It made more sense. It wasn't like... You know, give me a foot massage. That's an order. Save your life and throw me off the cliff. That's an order.
What was your previous go-to? Something about like you're going to bash me in the face with a bat or something?
Yeah, right.
And that's an order.
Yeah, something like along those lines made a lot of sense. It's funny how I know exactly in my brain what I'm referring to, but then when it comes out my mouth, it just doesn't make any sense.
It's funny that. Brains.
Yeah. Brains.
What are you going to do?
Funny that, brains.
You need
one of them colonoscopies.
What was it? Narcolepsy. What was the joke we were saying last time?
The joke was colonoscopy.
Oh, it's like what Jesse said.
Had nothing to do with narcolepsy.
But yeah,
he's trying to change the joke again.
if you tell your subordinate out of my way, Mister. The Mister part's weird, but you can say it's okay to say that's an order.
That's
the
Mr. culture. Spock.
Yeah, the Mister is a cultural thing in that period of the military.
Well, you should have said Mister. Spock. Yeah, you shouldn't have just said Mister.
In Star Trek II, they refer to Mister. Savick. Because they were trying to be woke, but it was not. They were like 80s, so they were definitely not there yet. We're still not there today, by the way. We're still all fucked up and horrible. But 1982, they were trying. They just weren't quite making it.
So in this episode, Kirk goes to Scotty. While Kirk's on the planet and Scotty's up there, he goes, beam us up, Scotty.
That's the closest they ever get.
Yeah, I was going to say, to beam me up. So
never say beam me up.
Never say it.
And now you can't. Now they couldn't say it if they wanted to.
Because
it would ruin everything.
Because Shatner's dead.
No, he's still
alive. No, he's not.
Just turned 90.
Yeah, I know.
Jimmy Doohan's dead.
He looks, as somebody put it, he doesn't look like a 90-year-old man. He looks like an unhealthy 65-year-old. That Shatner, that is. Most of the rest of them are dead. Most of the people in this episode.
Most of the rest of them are dead.
Most of the people in this episode are dead. Nichelle Nichols is still alive, although
Walter Koenig's doing poorly.
Walter Koenig is still alive.
Although I heard she's doing poorly.
I feel really bad.
It's kind of disrespectful.
No disrespect intended. She's a wonderful and excellent person.
George Takei is still alive.
George Takei is probably the most sprightly of the bunch. Yeah.
There was another funny part. It was at 18 minutes and 20 seconds when Kirk is talking to Spock, too.
18 minutes and 20 seconds. He goes, exactly.
He goes, that's our ship calling, Spock. You answer them. And then he awkwardly makes this communicator float up to Spock, too.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be him tossing it up, but it just kind of floats up to him.
Well, maybe the gravity is different on that planet. Maybe that's why the plant's elders were so tall, because the gravity is lesser, and they don't have to fight against gravity with the structure of the plant cells.
Why were they so big?
Quite so much.
In 14 minutes and 28 seconds in the previous one, the survival, the panels on the screen for the view screen had backwards perspective, meaning the view screen looked like it was an indent, but the panels were such that it made them look like they were going out. 14 minutes, 28
seconds. They'll fix that in the HD remaster.
Speaking of the previous episode, mm-hmm. did you notice that this is another one of those episodes where Spock has a recording of the episode and he's checking back?
No, I didn't notice that.
I didn't notice that either.
He was looking at something and, yeah.
Maybe he was looking for the bad guy.
Yeah.
Played by Ted Knight.
Yeah.
Ted Knight, most famous for Mary Tyler Moore Show, Too Close for Comfort, and Caddyshack.
Oh, yeah.
He was also a voice actor. I didn't know. Weirdly, Ted Knight in The Survivor, Ted Knight is the voice of Carter Winston, but he's uncredited.
Yeah.
But he did a bunch of... you okay?
Yes. I don't know where I was going with that.
he did a bunch of voiceover work back then. He did the somewhat weirdly named the new Scooby-Doo movies, which are not to be confused with the new movie Scooby-Doo movies.
I remember seeing some
He did
of
the
those.
Batman yeah. Superman Hour and Super Friends. He did voices on Super Friends. So Ted Knight, Too Close for Comfort, which is a bizarre show.
Then it was
for some reason I watched a lot as a young man.
It was on.
He was a cartoonist and he had a puppet on his hand.
Yeah. And he sat on couches that had no backs to them.
Yeah. And he fell over backwards somehow without hurting himself.
Yeah.
Injuring himself seriously.
Yeah. He's a good stuntist. Mm. At one point.
He had cancer.
At one point,
is that what did him in the end?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
There we go. Let's just close that loop.
Yeah. So when Stavos is like talking about, he's like talking about Spock. He's like, mine, the essence of his mind, return to your ship. Here's your communicator. Go back to your ship. And this is after Spock is captured. Kirk goes, not without my first officer. Isn't that like a line from something? Not without my baby, or not without my my Jim Jam or something?
There was
the dingo ate my first officer.
And it was like, not without my...
Not without my daughter. That was some kind of made-for-TV movie back in the 80s or something.
So they got that from Kirk, not without my first...
Stranded in a room.
They got that from Kirk, not without my first officer. Also, when Sulu got bitified...
He got pricked. He got pricked by the plant.
He got pricked by the...
Bitified.
He got pricked by the plant.
Some alien dewdrop.
Alien dewdrop.
McCoy wanted to give him...
Filled with poison.
McCoy wanted to give him... Dilevine of all things.
What's Dilevine?
It's too slow.
Is that a drug
it
that
works
kills
too slow.
Him?
It's a broad spectrum if antitoxin carried in 2260 Starfleet
medkits. Why would you ever name a medicine Dilevine?
I know, it sounds like Dilapine.
Yeah. It's like you gotta take 3 weeks of twice a day chopapine.
Chopapine.
You gotta take chopapine twice a day for the next 3 weeks.
Okay, I have a
question. You'll be cured.
I have a question. Have you all noticed that...
You said you all instead of y'all.
You're right. That's improper grammar.
We live in the South.
You...
Technically,
I guess you should cover it, right? Have you noticed?
How hot was it?
Use.
Their eyeballs. They have no whites in their eyes. Why don't they have whites in their eyes? Is that a cost? Is there saving money?
Yeah, that's right. They have skin colored eye whites.
Yeah. So is that probably some small
skin colored eye whites is a good name for a band.
So do you think they did that because they're like, it doesn't look too bad. We can save enough money and they don't look too much like alien weirdos. What's it called? Uncanny Valley weirdness kind of shit.
It could be if you had whites in their eyes with the level of animation they were able to do, maybe it looked more disturbing.
Yeah. Cause sometimes they're perfectly still, but their eyes move.
Yeah, I know. Like, and they dart back and forth. good music in the rock and roll time. All right, any other comments about one or both of these episodes? I have the
why
one...
are they so big?
I know, why the fuck are the clones so big? I did like when Kirk, you know, you talked about Kirk wrestling Agmar or the whichever plant person he was
he got him in the arm lock, behind the belly to back arm lock. It's a setup to the belly to back suplex. No, it's not the suplex
belly to back.
There's a certain kind of suplex where you can lock their arms behind them and suplex them. This is the beginning to that.
Email us with an explanation at feedback@iscastartrek.com. No, but I was referring to before that, I believe it's before that, right when Spock gets captured by the dragon plant creatures.
When he puts him in a chokehold.
Even before that, he walks up to the guy and he like grabs Agmar by the plant shoulders, and Agmar is kind of doing this floopy thing with his hand, and Kirk is all like, "I need my first officer back," or whatever he's saying. But it's an example of that animated style that's great because the dimensions of the plant people, of the Phylosians, were sufficiently non-humanoid to make that look hilarious.
Yeah.
As opposed to any other normal alien, you know, the captain goes up and grabs their shoulders and shakes them around a bit. It looks like a normal interaction between two people. But in this case, it looked like Kirk like all awkwardly like manhandling this this potted plant who's like got these tentacle hands waving around like, oh no.
That's actually a thing in fighting games, is where they have, you know, different size. They might have 30 characters, but they'll have like three basic sizes or something that they can interact with. But then every once in a while, they'll have one special character that's its own sort of thing. And they have
like Stavros Tuberculosis 5.
Yeah, like that guy. And so they have to redo all the animations for all the characters just for that one character. Isn't that interesting what I just said?
Hugely interesting, yes.
So they but Filmation was too lazy to do a new set of animations for this.
Low budget.
But
look how much they can do with these low budgets.
Do you think they just did all the scenes, all like the little animation sequences out before the season and were like, okay, this is what you have to work with. You have no money for no more than this.
You know, I could kind of see that. or certainly by... So the thing to remember with the animated series as we continue on, in the second season, they did have a second season, but it's only 6 episodes, which I don't know. I guess it could be that it was the remainder of whatever was originally ordered for the first season. I haven't looked that up yet. But yeah, so they clearly were, as Jesse noted and observed, that they recycle not only the actual... you know, Kirk and Co. running, but the basic animation cells they'll draw over them or whatever to make different similarly shaped flying creatures zooming down or people running across and silhouettes and all that. So I don't know.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah, yo.
When Kirk was gonna
Kirk gonna get you.
Carter,
you're gonna get Kirk.
The Vendorian. We never learned the Vendorian's name, did we?
No, because they didn't respect us enough, and they didn't respect Vendorian culture enough.
They insulted both us and the Vendorian culture.
It is. I'm only partially joking here. It is another example of that sort of human white white person perspective of like, this is what's important to us. We don't give a fuck about that low class alien's name.
We'll get a kick of this. So when he was a table and Kirk was like, I'm gonna pour this stuff on you, what he poured on him was Orientine acid. Is that supposed to be like
Oriental? It's okay to say it in this context.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's okay. It's okay to say it in this context, right?
I do believe it was it was meant to exoticize it.
Yes.
Word can we use to make an exotic
acid? And they might not have even done it on purpose.
Probably not.
George Lucas probably didn't mean to make those Green Trade Federation creatures from episode one. Like racist like that.
I hope not.
But he had so many other characters that were, though, so you wonder. You know,
there is a certain blindness to your own, you know, when you're the dominant group. It's easy to be blind about.
Yeah.
Oh, we're just joshing around.
Yeah.
We're just what was it? Orientine.
Orientine. I don't know where I can't remember where
it came in a yellow. It was in like a yellow crayon.
Yeah, it was. I have an image of it here.
But made of some sort of crystal, because he said, other than this crystal, I think it was the material the container was made of, which obviously makes sense. I love how often they won't explain something that it would probably be helpful for them to have explained. And then other times it's like, yeah, no shit, Kirk. Obviously it doesn't melt through the container it's in, because we can imply that. We can understand whatever the rationale is. You know, you don't have to go out of your way to be like, it'll go through anything. Except this particular crystal that this
we don't want the fans calling up and being like, well, it didn't go through its container. Didn't go through its container.
Yeah,
you didn't
but the fans
say
are gonna call up and be like, why the fuck are the clones so big? Why are the clones so big, Mr. Roddenberry? We can still call up. We can call up Walter Koenig. We can call his ass up and
let's call
like,
him up.
Hey,
he'd be like, dude, I don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah, he's probably bitter about it.
Yeah, I think he's gone a little bit back and forth on this episode. So.
Although it was a pretty clever ruse that they the Romulans had with the Vendorian.
Oh, yeah.
about like drawing them into the neutral zone. I thought that was kind of
they're
clever.
Good at ruses. Those
that whole thing was
ass Romulans.
Yeah, they're inscrutable.
That procedure, those
inscrutable Romulans.
Indeed.
If that was in a modern Star Trek, we would probably be privy to their plan the whole time, and the tension would be in how and when are Kirk and Co gonna figure it out, as opposed to it just being exposition at the very end explaining like, because when we first see the Romulan, like when Kirk is first telling that to the Romulan, I was like, is Kirk just bullshitting? Or is that actually what happened? Or is he theorizing that's what happened? Like, it wasn't 100% clear. And then, of course, by the end, it's obvious that it's just that's meant to be the case. But again, constrained time.
It was weird how they Carter described how he had surgery, skin graft, and regrowth of bone. Did he melt? Is that what he was implying? Is that he melted? Well, they rebuilt him, and that's why he doesn't love Anne anymore?
When your spaceship crashes, it could be some serious shit, man.
Yeah, but I guess that's why he doesn't love Anne anymore. Yeah, we saw Discovery. What happened in Discovery, right? Isn't that basically what happened? Is he, dude got fucked up, and they turned him into other dude. And
Clem Fandango, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no spoilers. They would have to understand all sorts of things. Spoiler for that.
Right.
But anyways. Look it up. Look up Clem Fandango. Look up Clem Fandango. Clem H. Fandango.
Well.
Any other odds and ends? Any other conclusions? Any other sprightly observations?
Nooks and crannies.
Nooks and crannies.
As they say in England.
Yes.
I used to think that nooks and crannies were like some kind of fruit compote that you'd put on your...
Like cranberries. That's what this is called, cranberries.
Nooks and crannies. That's probably why. Crannies, cranberries. I'm stupid.
Were nooks and short nooks, for like hazelnuts or
nooks
something?
Nooks were some kind of sauce or some kind of buttery something or other.
So you wanted buttery sauce and cranberries?
And I didn't want it. That's what the commercial suggested.
That's not what I wanted.
Yeah, that's why I was stuck
I just
stuck
wanted
with me.
Jelly.
Sorry, the commercial that's showing some muffins. Okay, it's okay. I understand.
I was fucking like eight. What do you want from me?
I was fucking 8 years old. Come on, man. I misunderstood. I misapprehended what was on the television. I was too young for watching television. It was only 13 inches. It was a 13-inch television. You had to turn the knobs. Of course I wasn't going to understand.
Two knobs.
You did have two knobs. UHF and VHF.
Two big knobs.
A UHF station. What's that from?
From the movie UHF.
Yep.
By Weird Al Yankovic.
Da-da-da-da.
I'm your worst nightmare.
I'll allow it. And with that, I think we've probably concluded our discussion.
Why were the clones so big?
I do want to know why the clones were so big. We would very much like to hear from you.
The episode's never going to end, because every time that's brought up, that's a guaranteed 5 more minutes.
You write us in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com, or better yet, find us on social media.
Find us
at itsgotstartrek.com or at itsgotstartrek on Twitter and Instagram.
Find us.
Find us on YouTube.
Silence us.
And let us know what we're missing. Why the hell were the clones so big? And if there's no on-screen reason, what are your theories as to why the clones were so big?
Why didn't anybody tell me my clones were so big?
This is an unlisted wall. Okay, go watch Spaceballs, and we don't know yet what we're talking about next week, but
I'm talking about Spaceballs.
It'll be good. It'll be Star Trek related. There's a high probability it'll either be Voyager or TNG.
We just saw Voyager.
Deep Space Nine. Could be a movie.
Oh, you're doing that trick.
We could revisit one of the newer shows. You never know what you're going to get on the It's Got Star Trek podcast. I mean, sometimes you do. Sometimes we'll tell you. But otherwise, you got to follow us on social media to get your homework for next week. And then we'll let you know what the deal is. But otherwise, that'll do it for us tonight. And so I'll say goodnight. These guys, you want to say goodnight?
We stop saying our names. People need to know our names.
My name is Dan.
My name is Jesse Dan Patrick.
This is how I talk. I talk like this.
I refuse to say my name.
I'm Jesse. I talk like this every day. Awuga.
Don't dox me, man.
I'm Jesse.
We like the audience interactions, so we'll leave these context clues for you to determine which person is in fact which.
We did leave a trail of clues.
I think there are sufficient context clues. You remember in elementary school, you get those little grids with the clues, and you got to put the X's in the grids and the lines.
The goose is always lying. The bird says the dog always has a dirty asshole. Which one peed in your mouth?
Yeah. I mean, you learn all sorts of things. You learn logic and facts about animals and those things. So anyway, follow us on Twitter. Subscribe and follow. Oh, well, one last thing. I wanted to do a test. I wonder if if you say Apple iTunes or Apple Podcasts, I wonder if you say that a lot in your podcast, if that makes Apple be all like, well, hello there, Mr. Podcast. I'm going to raise you up in the rankings.
Do you think they have some kind of voice detection?
Who's they?
Apple Podcasts. Oh, I saw it.
Apple Podcasts. We are available on
Does he want me to
Apple?
Say the government or something? Like, what is it? Who's
not the government,
they?
Apple Podcasts.
I'm just saying, maybe Apple. If we say Apple Podcasts.
Apple.
Which we are available,
man, I
on
some,
Apple Podcasts.
I bought some fucking Honeycrisp apples from Safeway, and they taste like nothing. It's not even they taste bad. They taste like nothing.
Those must be fake Honeycrisps.
They are fake.
You got some counterfeit Honeycrisps, which is a real thing, is my understanding. So anyway,
really?
Yeah. Well, we'll follow up on that next week, and we'll also talk about Star Trek.
Apple Podcast.
Hey, Apple.
Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and wherever else you get podcasts.
Apple Podcasts. So if this doesn't work for Apple, it'll work for our viewers because it'll be all subliminal.
It will be. And
it's very subliminal what we're doing.
Let us know through the Twitter or the email or whatever why the fuck the clones were so big. And otherwise, you'll hear from us next week.
Apple Podcasts.
Ciao.
Apple
Podcasts.
Pie.
Now, by the way, Mr. Sulu, any chance of teaching me that body throw could come in handy sometime?
I don't know, sir. It isn't just physical, you know. You have to be inscrutable.
Inscrutable? Sulu, you're the most scrutable man I know.